Hello and welcome to the Practice Drill Podcast, episode 28. This week is a very special episode as we look at the Ashes series ahead of tomorrow's first test at the Gabba. We're analysing that game and we're looking further into the rest of the series. Shout out to Sencho for providing that killer intro as always and introducing my good mate Blaze McKee. Blaze, how are you ahead of tomorrow's first game?
I'm very excited. As you said, we've been talking about this moment for a while, and it's actually snuck up on us, I feel, a bit.
It really
in
has.
In the last 2 weeks, it's gone out. You know, there's been the other storylines with, obviously, the Australian cricket team and the captaincy, and not much talk about the first test, but it's on tomorrow.
And how excited are you? Scale of 1 to 10. I asked you last week. You diverted it towards the Fat Lambs game. So on a scale of 1 to 10. Ahead of tomorrow's game.
I think it's right up there, 8, 9, 10 maybe. It's always a great thing. The cricket starts nice and early. You can get up and probably flick it on, and there's the pre-game ready to go. So definitely very excited, and I can't wait for that first ball.
Now, obviously, just a question. Will you be watching Channel 7 or Fox Sports? Which one are you going with?
I think Channel 7, to be honest. I had a little flick through the Big Bash yesterday on both sides, and I like the Channel 7 sort of commentary team to start with. But as you say, test match 5 days. So plenty of time to analyse both broadcasts and see which one we're going with for the summer.
And so who are you looking forward to listening to from the Channel 7 crew?
I like Ricky Ponting's on there. Yeah, I really like his analysis. I think he's pretty switched on in terms of some of those older players can be a bit, past it, I think, and some of their comments are a bit off the mark. But I think Ricky Ponting's a really smart cricketer, and I like listening to him talk about the game.
I think it's because he's still, like, kind of kept around the game, obviously, with his involvement as a coach in the IPL. He kind of knows the players. He knows what the personalities of the current team, whereas some of the other commentators who are not as involved as that, they just see it from the outside, whereas he's obviously been inside, and then he commentates from the outside. Yeah. So I think that's what gives him great... that great talking when it comes to commentary was the word I was looking for. Great commentary when it comes to the cricket. Guys, if you'd like to follow us on Instagram and Twitter, go and follow the Instagram handle T_practicedrill. Same on Twitter there. But Blaze, let's get straight into this special Ashes episode. Now, just a brief overview of the series. 5 tests, as always. First game is at the Gabba, which starts tomorrow from the 8th to the 12th. Then we go to Adelaide for the second test, which is a day-night one, 16th to the 20th of December. Then the third test, this is where it changes up a little bit, MCG, 26th to the 30th, the classic Boxing Day test match. Then the SCG, 5th to the 9th. And then the 5th test is scheduled for the 14th to the 18th. Now, as I said, some slight changes to the usual setup with the SCG not hosting the classic final test match. It's still got the New Year's Eve test, but not the final one where we get to see, what will be Australia lifting the urn. But I think the biggest change to all of this is Perth getting given that final test match and then now not being given it. What do you make of that whole situation?
To be honest, for me, it's been on the cards for a while. I've had a bit of experience with WA over the last 18 months. And, Mark McGowan over there, he runs a pretty tight ship. And, I think although there was talk and there was hope that it would still be on over there, I think it was always going to be a bit of a long bow to get the teams over there, particularly, obviously, these tests. They're pretty tight turnaround. So any sort of mandatory quarantine is going to make it really hard for those teams. But it's going to be really interesting to see where they go, where they give a second test to Sydney or Melbourne or where they go somewhere new.
So just to give some context, WA has a strict 14-day quarantine, which we understand. We understand the severity of COVID, but, they did have that 5th test scheduled for Optus Stadium, but it's now been cancelled and put out to tender. Cricket Australia has confirmed that the criteria for the new venue is that they've got to have the ability to host a day-night match, which is going to be crazy because there's never been 2 day-night tests in a singular series. There's only been 16 in history. Australia has, over the last, 5 summers or something, have had it at the Adelaide Oval. It's arguably my favourite test match to watch. But to have a second one, how exciting is that? And then secondly, who do you think should host it?
Yeah, I think the day-night test has become a real highlight in the Australian calendar. And when we were looking at those series before, I was thinking to myself, man, I've got to get to these Adelaide day-nights at one time. So I guess from a selfish standpoint, it'd be great to see the SCG have a second one and have the day-night just so we could go and experience that. Obviously, in terms of the COVID situation, it would probably be best that it's there as well just because the teams are already in Sydney. But having said that, it would be also cool, I guess, for the guys down in Hobart or Canberra to see if they have a test there. And I think if you did have a test there, you could guarantee a sellout every single day. But obviously, for the broadcasters and you know, Cricket Australia looking to get the most revenue, they might look to push it to a bigger stadium.
Yes, it was understood, going off what you just said, that the broadcasters are pushing for the MCG or SCG. And it is beneficial because of the time slot that it's in, because you know I'm guessing a majority of the viewers of cricket are all on the East Coast. That's just due to population, really. So those two venues are perfect, and then they do have the facilities to host a day and night. I mean, you know, SCG has one of the most significant games of cricket ever, with the World Series being played there under the lights, and that's why the SCG initially got those lights. So I think it'd be cool to finally, you know, we've seen Big Bash, we've seen One Days, we've seen international T20s played there, but then to have a day and night test, I think would be unbelievable. And again, from a selfish point, we want to go. We'll be there. Maybe even do a potty live from the SCG day and night game. Who knows? But no, Belrive Oval and Manuka Oval have both expressed interest. I just think maybe too small of a venue. Grounds are smaller than the other usual five. Although the SCG is quite small, it's still bigger than those two. What do you think? Do you think it would be, would it lose a bit of atmosphere having it at a smaller venue like that?
I think you can still pack a lot of atmosphere because, as we said, they would be pretty packed out. And I think Belrive in particular, you know, it was scheduled to have the Afghanistan test and that got cancelled. So maybe they do have a bit of a claim to it. And I think they could create a good atmosphere. Obviously, they've got a huge sporting fan base and Tasmania in general are pushing for some really increased sporting representation in Australia across. You know, they've got the basketball team in. They're looking for an AFL team. So they'll be pushing pretty hard and I'm sure the turnout there will be great. Belrive also offers something different in terms of a wicket. You know, you tend to see a bit more grass down there and, you know, it could be exciting to see a day-night test. Obviously, you know, the pink ball down at Belrive, I'm sure the English team, and we'll get into that later, but I'm sure they'll be licking their lips at the potential to go down to Tassie for what I guess they're hoping is a series decider.
Yeah, definitely, but also I just think the easiest thing for England, who didn't even want to come here in the first place, is they'll just want to have the less hectic tour possible. So if that means, you know, playing the final game at the SCG, perfect, because then they don't have to go anywhere. And also, if you're going to spend extra time in any city in all of Australia, it's going to be Sydney, because there's that much to do, especially in summer. So my prediction is the SCG at the moment, due to the broadcasting and just, you know, the magnitude of it being, you know, a cooler venue, the history that I spoke about, over those smaller grounds in Canberra and Hobart. That's why I think so. But also, it was interesting because Cricket Australia proposed a sixth test in the Ashes series back in 2010 to be played at Belrive. So maybe this is a chance to then, you know, acknowledge the Tasmanian fan base there and give them a test match, you know, because they used to get the warm-up games that were in November. You know, sometimes we'd play New Zealand for a couple test matches and they'd get one of those games. So maybe it's time to go back to Belrive. But at the moment, that will probably be about a week away from finding out that decision. But what's not a week away is this first test, and the teams are starting to roll out. Australia in particular have announced it. Pat Cummins announced the 11 for the Gabba test earlier than we expected at the official launch of the series, either yesterday or the day before. Now, the team that he has given is David Warner and Marcus Harris to open the batting, Manus Labuschagne at 3, Steve Smith at 4, Travis Head and Cameron Green at 5 and 6, Alex Carey to be the wicketkeeper and bat number 7, and then Cummins, Stark, Hazelwood and Lyon to be the four key bowlers. Now, Harris, given the green light again to replace the injured Will Pekowski, has a career average of only 23.7 at the international level, But what's even more alarming than that is his average against England in Test cricket, 9.6 across six innings. What do you think about the selection of Marcus Harris? Obviously, you know, he was a part of the tour over to England. Different conditions. Now he's on home soil. Do you think he'll be a little bit more comfortable and he will be able to maybe get that average up into double figures? Or do you think it's going to be another case of Marcus struggling?
Yeah, I think he definitely will feel more comfortable. I think any of those Aussie batsmen, we've seen a lot of them struggle over in England. Usman Khawaja struggled as well, but you know, when they play in Australia, they tend to be pretty good. So in terms of who you pick, I think Australia could have really picked either or, and it would have been a solid option at the top. I probably would have gone with Khawaja. That's just a personal thing. I mean, I'm not sure really stats behind it, but I do like Uzi, how he goes about it, and his sort of attitude to the game. But, you know, as we spoke about earlier, Australia do have quite a stubborn kind of selection policy sometimes, and they do like to have, you know, a solid team and a bit of a pick-and-stick mentality. So Marcus Harris was the incumbent. Obviously, he kind of dropped out when Pekowski came in, but he did come back into the side. He opened in the last test, and I guess that's the moves the selectors have gone for.
Yeah, I can't wait for Pekowski to be injury-free, not getting concussed, and can come and play, you know, some consistent cricket for Australia, because I think it's time that we start looking towards the future. Warner getting towards the end of his career. And I feel like the last time we saw Warner playing some of his most brilliant cricket, obviously he scored that triple century against Pakistan a couple summers ago, but, you know, I still think his best cricket was when he had, you know, Chris Rogers batting with him, and they played plenty of cricket together. And ever since then, it's just been chop and changing who's been his partner. And he hasn't been consistent. His partner hasn't been a consistent batsman either. So, you know, again, it just looks like one of those things where Marcus Harris probably knows I've probably got one or two tests, and then will be ready to come back in. But the other interesting selection that we've spoken about so much is the number five spot. We spoke about it, you know, during the footy season, and now it's finally here, and Travis Head has kept his spot at number five, winning the two-horse race against Usman Khawaja, who you just spoke about before. Obviously, I think what's won him this is they both had very good Sheffield Shield form. Travis Head obviously had that ridiculous 200 in the Marsh Cup, which is a one-day tournament for those who don't know it. And also, he's the incumbent number five. So it's kind of hard to push someone out when all they've done is played Sheffield Shield cricket and played well. So do you think that's the right selection, or would you like to see Uzi get that number five?
Yeah, the number five position is, I guess, a really interesting one. There's been a lot of talk about it for a number of years now, and Travis Head's probably the guy. At the start of the summer, I didn't really think there was much of a conversation about it, but obviously the media, I guess, started floating that they were looking at Khawaja as the number five batsman, which is really interesting because he'd kind of started there as his test career, but then he'd kind of been seen as an opener towards the end, and he doesn't really bat in the middle order for Queensland in the domestic stuff. So I guess when they floated that idea, you did start to think, yeah, maybe that's why they have brought him back in. And I even heard Ricky Ponting say he thought that they would go with Khawaja at five just because, you know, why would you bring in an older sort of player and bring someone back from the sort of wilderness as Khawaja has been and then not select him? So I kind of started on Head and then moved to Khawaja, but they've gone with Travis Head, which I think is a pretty good call. You know, for all that's, I guess, spoken about Travis Head, he does average close to 40, and he does do well in Australian conditions. So I think he'll do pretty well this summer.
I think it's almost a bit of a like-for-like kind of thing. I just think when I think about Uzi's international career and Travis Head's international career, I think Khawaja's is a little bit better. But I think he's also had more time in there. And the only thing that I liked over Travis Head is the fact that Usman Khawaja, in Australian conditions, is good, like Warner-type level stuff. But it's when you take him overseas that he struggles. And I think I've spoken about it before on the podcast, or if not, I'd definitely spoken to you about it. I'd be saying to Usman Khawaja, mate, you're always going to be brought up around, you know, series in Australia, but we're not taking you overseas anymore because we've taken that risk and it hasn't worked out before. And yeah, I just get him trying to be the best player that he can be this late in his career. But The final thing we want to talk about on the Australian team selection is there was reportedly some pressure on Stark to keep his spot due to his inconsistent form over the last 18 months. Jai Richardson was apparently the one knocking on the door. What do you think about this? It's pretty interesting. I mean, I have been quite critical of Mitchell Stark's bowling during the last year and a half. Jai Richardson's always been stepping up, but I still don't know if he's really a test-type bowler yet. What do you think about this, you know, articles coming out about this topic?
I think this Mitchell Stark story's been around for a few summers now, and I think, while he has been inconsistent, I think that bowling group's pretty set, and on the whole, they've been pretty successful. Obviously, Mitchell Stark is maybe the struggling one out of the four for the last 18 months, so that's who the media's going to target, but you know, I think that bowling group's pretty set. Obviously, Richardson's now kind of the next in. So if someone goes down with injury or when one of them does retire, he seems to be the next in.
Yeah.
But I think Stark's pretty well set in there. And, you know, the reports, maybe it did come from inside the camp and maybe they were considering a move there. But, you know, I doubt it. And, yeah, I think Stark will be pretty set for this summer.
Yeah, I hope Stark stays there. I don't have anything personal against Stark. It's just, he does seem to not execute the bowling plans all the time, but it's a new series. It's a new chance. They're coming off a World Cup victory, so the confidence level is going to be up. So, yeah, hopefully he can actually continue it through. And I just think it's a nightmare for batsmen mentally when you see Mitchell Stark coming in, whereas I think for Jai Richardson, it's a little bit unknown. You go, oh, he's under pressure because he's just coming in, so why should I be feeling any pressure with him coming in bowling to me? Whereas Mitchell Stark, you know he can clock that 150 plus and that Yorker delivery that's been, hallmark of his career. So, yeah, a little bit of a nothing article and topic, but, you know, worth mentioning just because, you know, he has struggled in the last 18 months. So I understand it, but I don't think there's really too much to it, and I can't see the Australian selectors, you know, really putting that much pressure on him. But we'll move on to talking about the English team for the first test. Now, Joe Root has kept England's cards quite close to his chest and is yet to reveal the team for the first test at the Gabba. Many are trying to piece a potential team together. But, Blaise, what do you think their 11 will look like for tomorrow's game?
Yeah, I think, you know, England at the top of the order, they'll probably have Rory Burns and the young Hamid there who just came in their last series and did quite well, so it'll be interesting to see how he goes. I think David Milan will be at three. You know, he also just came in the last series and did well. I think Joe Root and Ben Stokes will be their two big batsmen at four and five.
Two key wickets right there.
Probably Johnny Bairstow at six. Maybe that's the question there, whether they go Bairstow or, you know, the young Ollie Pope's also in the squad. He could be there. And then Jos Buttler will probably take the gloves. Great form from the World Cup. Then the bowlers, probably Chris Wokes, who's a pretty talented cricketer, can bat as well.
Yeah.
Ollie Robinson probably comes in. Obviously, you know, we'll get onto it, but Jimmy Anderson's been ruled out. So Ollie Robinson, bit of an unknown, but did really well in his limited opportunities. And then probably Broad and Leach as the spinner to finish off the 11.
And you did mention Jimmy Anderson there. Now, the leading wicket taker of all time for England has been ruled out of tomorrow's first test due to a reported calf niggle. But many are speculating on his omission, and it is reported that Anderson might just be focusing on being as close to 100% for the Adelaide test and focusing on the pink ball test. Obviously, when you get to that age, you know, it's reported that, you know, athletes start to decline at around, you know, that 35 plus mark, and he's now 39. He's been around for a while. So asking him to play all five tests might be too much of an ask. What do you think about it? Do you think he's actually got an injury, or do you think it's him just trying to save himself for future tests and maybe seeing like this wicket might not play out to be the best conditions for his bowling?
Yeah, I do think he probably does have a little niggle there, and it's probably a bit of camp A, bit of camp B, where England are probably choosing their battles and thinking, you know what, you know, we've got a bit of a niggle here, the Gabba might not suit Jimmy, and we're going to, you know, save him for some tests that maybe suit him. Obviously, the day-night test, maybe even two, are going to really suit him. And the other good thing for them, as we spoke about, is Ollie Robinson's, you know, in quite a good form at his limited, you know, tests, so I guess they're not really forced to to play Jimmy Anderson in all their games, and they've got a bit of cover in the fast bowling lineup. I do think probably he does have a bit of an injury, but I dare say if it was a deciding test, he would be in there.
Yeah, yeah.
But they're just going to save him, give him an extra week or so, and then let him go in Adelaide with the pink ball.
But I do think with him taken out of the lineup that you've given, their bowling doesn't look too strong compared to when you have a look at Australia's, where you've got, you know, arguably one of the best spinners in the world. You've got, you know, definitely two of the top five best bowlers in Josh Hazlewood and Pat Cummins. And then Mitchell Starc on his day is arguably the best bowler in the entire world. So they do look a little bit thin, don't you reckon, when you have a look at, you know, bringing in Robinson and Wokes and Broad. Broad is never that quick in Australia. So what do you think?
I think you spoke a bit about it earlier as well. You know, a lot of things about bowling is sometimes even the mental aspect. You know, Starc hasn't been the greatest form in the last 18 months, but he still has that real reputation of bowling real quick. And that Australian group has that reputation of being a pretty fierce bowling side and pretty steady. So I think whenever you take out, you know, a real established player and bring someone in who's pretty new, even if they've had success, probably when you just look at them on the face value, you're a bit less intimidated. So, yeah, I think the Aussie batters, will probably take some confidence and will definitely back themselves against a young Ollie Robinson. And also, you know, if they can get on top of him early, we've seen Australia can be a very tough place for bowlers when the batsmen get on top early. So it's going to be a real challenge for him, and England will be hoping that he can step up to that task.
Yeah, and I think for Ollie Robinson as well, this isn't just like any other series. You know, he's coming into an Ashes, so there's that added impact. And then for someone that young, you've got to be bowling to two of the top five best batsmen in the world, and Steve Smith and Manus Labuschagne. And what's even harder to bowl to two successful batsmen is two unique batsmen. Like, they have weird setups when they're batting, and I don't think it'll necessarily throw him off. Like, he'll get used to it. But it's, you know, it is something where you're like, it gets frustrating when you see Steve Smith taking this big step across and you're bowling a ball on off stump and he's worked you behind square. You know, you're kind of going like, what the hell? Like, I even think as myself as a bowler, it's always kind of frustrating when you're bowling well and you put a ball in a good area and they hit it into an area that they just shouldn't have. It's always like, man, like, what am I meant to do? Like, what can I do against this kind of batting? And that's what Marnus and Steve Smith do to other teams. So that's going to be interesting to see how the young Ollie Robinson reacts to that now. Also, Ben Stokes coming into the team. He'll be batting number five, you reckon. He's a late inclusion to England's tour. You know, we spoke about it at one point on our podcast that he wasn't coming. Now he is coming, which is great because he's a great cricketer and also brings a little bit more added like tension and rivalry. But he hasn't played much cricket over the last 6 months due to mental health reasons and recovering from an operation on his finger. What do you think the inclusion of Ben Stokes will mean for England and the series?
I think it strengthens them up a lot. You know, we talked just before about even just on face value how much a name and someone with a bit of a record behind him can have just when you look across, you know, a lineup. And I think Ben Stokes is that player for England. He can do it with the bat and the ball, and he can be pretty destructive, and he's pretty aggressive cricketer, which I think is a really important thing in Australia. We saw the Indian team that came here and was successful last summer, you know, played an aggressive brand of cricket. Guys like Rishabh Pant, you know, really took it to the Australian bowlers, and you know Ben Stokes is going to do that as well. So I think he adds a different sort of look to the English side, and you know, he's going to strengthen their batting up for sure.
Now, Chris Silverwood, England's head coach, has said that the presence of what he called the Headingley hero, which is Ben Stokes and probably one of the defining moments of his career against the Aussies in the last Ashes series over there, has really boosted the team's belief that they can regain the Ashes after the last two disappointing series. I was surprised thinking, and you know, when we were doing our research for this podcast, that, you know, I'd completely forgotten about the series that they won back at home. But since then, 4-0 in Australia and that tie back in England. But what really was, Australia were a lot more dominant than England were in that series. They just couldn't get the job done in the final test. There's so much pressure on this England team because they haven't won a test match in Australia since 2011. So what do you think? Does Ben Stokes really boost that belief that they can win a test match in this series?
Yeah, I think he does. As we said, he's a confident bloke. He has had a bit of success in Australia. He scored 100 here in Perth when they really struggled and lost 5-0 when Mitchell Johnson tore them to shreds that series. And I think, you know, it's pretty good media work from their coach there to get in the Headingley mention. You know, just little jabs getting, you know, into the Australians' head. Hey, this bloke's done it before against you guys. And you know, the Australians were talking about Steve Smith's averages, you know, against the English. It's the same thing. Just these little jabs to see if they can maybe hit a little nerve in the Aussie camp. And I think Ben Stokes is going to, you know, have a real impact on the series.
I think arguably he'll be their main target when it comes to bowling. Like, obviously Joe Root's the star batsman. But I think there's just that little bit more. They want his wicket more than I think they want Joe Root. I think they want to keep Joe Root kind of contained. But I think when it comes to Ben Stokes, it's like, we want to get you out. Like, and it'll be interesting to see, because Australia have had the tendency to, when they want to scare someone, a couple of the short balls, you know, target some stuff at the body. And it's going to be tough for him when you got, you know, three bowlers that can bowl 140 clicks at you. So, yeah, I'm so excited to see Ben Stokes bat against them. And also, you know, he's another bowling option as well for England as well, which we, you know, missed in the last section when we're talking about their bowling attack. But let's have a look towards tomorrow's test and a bit of the insights into it. Now, there's a bit of uncertainty surrounding how the pitch will play. Usually, the Brisbane wicket is a fast, bouncy wicket. What do you think it's going to look like come tomorrow?
I think the pitches show it's pretty green. Obviously, there's been a lot of rain around the East Coast, you know, the last fortnight. So, you know, there is a bit of chat that the groundsman hasn't been able to do as much work as he would have wanted. But I also think, you know, pitch chat is a perennial story in, you know, the Australian summer. I think we always start the summer off with some chat around whether the wicket will be, you know, a bit more bowler friendly. And then sometimes you get out there and it's about as paradise. Do I think that is the case this time? Probably not. There probably is a bit more substance to the story this time. Obviously, there's going to be a bit more grass on there, but I still think it'll be a pretty good wicket, and hopefully it's a good test wicket. You know, you do want to see a bit for the bowlers early, and I think both teams will back themselves with bat and ball on a good wicket to get the job done.
Now, the Gabba has developed a reputation as a very hard place to win for touring teams. Australia's won 33 out of the last 55 games there and only lost 9. So, you know, they've obviously a great reputation that held, you know, a lot of teams, you know, winless at the Gabba until last year when India beat them. Do you think there's going to be a little bit of a mental scarring for the Aussie team coming into tomorrow's game, thinking, well, you know, we're expected to get the job done here. We were expected last summer against India to get the job done, but we couldn't do it. Do you think that's going to come back to haunt them a little bit here?
I think England will definitely be hoping to, and I think England might try to bring up a few scars, you know, whether it's through the chat or whether it's the brand of cricket they play. I think Australia, typically at the Gabba, you start the summer off very aggressively and you know, on the first day, really get on top, and from there, you know, opposition teams are really on the back foot, whereas I think we've spoken about it, India played a different brand of cricket and they took it to Australia and were really aggressive. You know, I spoke about Rishabh Pant and you spoke about Ben Stokes being, you know, a big one for Australia. If he can set the tone for England with how he scores runs, even if it's not 100, even if it's a quick 50 or 60, you know, they can really, I guess, take it to Australia and hopefully open up a few of those scars at the Gabba.
Well, England will be up against history, having only won 9 games ever at the Gabba, and they've lost 33. So definitely history's not on their side here, but I think they understand that they're the underdogs, and I think they'll definitely embrace that. So, yeah, it's going to be exciting. Now, we also forgot to mention one of the great grounds in Australia for the possible fifth test replacement. Karen Rolton, are we giving any attention, any interest into this pitch being a possible place? We've got to give credit to the pitch curator, you know, making a nice batting surface. I think England would appreciate it after what is surely going to be 4 tough batting grounds for the first 4 tests.
pretty funny, actually. I think the groundsman must have been listening to the podcast and seeing it was such a batting friendly surface, because the last Sheffield Shield game they played there actually got the first day got suspended because it was actually a dangerous wicket. So he went completely the other way with that one. Hopefully, if he has a test there, he could find some middle ground. Maybe if it's 4-0 and England want a bit of respite, we can go to Adelaide and play Cameron Rolton and just have a 4-0 series. But yeah, I don't think it's going to get much of a say.
Well, look, he's obviously been mad that we've been talking badly on Cameron Rolton, but all we want is to see him do the best job that he can and make a wicket that works for both sides of the game. But obviously, he goes from one extreme to the next. So, yeah, mate, you're not going to get a test match doing that kind of stuff. But anyway, that's up to him to pitch to the Australian Cricket Board to get them to give him the green light for the fifth test. But I think the SCG's got it covered from what we spoke about in that first topic. But that will do us for this week's episode, the Ashes special. Blaze, I'll ask you one question. Prediction for the first test. What have you got?
The first test, I think Australia will win. I'm a bit more pessimistic maybe on their sweep chances than you are. Ooh. I think England will provide a bit of a stern opposition, but I think, you know, Australia have a really good history at the Gabba, and I think they'll continue it, you know, starting tomorrow.
Any, you know, player scores that you want to add into the multi to add on top of Australia winning?
I'm not sure. I think, you know, for Australia, the batsmen, I think it's going to be a Steve Smith and Labuschagne show, as usual. I think Smith in particular had a pretty quiet T20 World Cup. He's coming into a format that he really loves, and I think he's going to want to show that he's, you know, one of the best in the world. So I think Steve Smith, look out for him in this first test.
Yeah, fair enough. Well, that will do us for this week. If you'd like to follow us, go and look up the handle T_practice drill on both Instagram and Twitter. And we'll be keeping you up to date on the Ashes, especially on Twitter. We'll be doing some live updates on there. But until next week, enjoy the first test and enjoy all of your other sports.